Welcome to Ever Beyond. Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. It's the 27th of March, 2016. Here we are, after all this time. I've been playing ancient recordings this afternoon, going all the way back to 2012 and 29, and it's been fascinating to hear how everybody's story. I mean, basically, I played an interview with you, James, and an interview with Simon, and an interview with Alex, and an interview with Tolik, and it's fascinating to see how, you know, consistently you guys have all been all solid there down the line. So welcome to the Nexus. We're here at the point I think we've all been talking about, and I thought it would be the most appropriate thing to kind of gather you guys together and just literally step back and allow you to talk with each other, which is something that nobody else has ever let you do. So, I first of all would like to, round the clock here, Jim Nichols, fellow student of Aldebaran, ET UFO artist. You'll have seen his work all over the web. Simon Parks, representing the Progressive Mantids and Reptilians, also accompanied in his home by Wynne Keach, who's an inventor extraordinaire, and more than one thing in your life will have been affected by Wynne's inventions. We have Tolek, representing. Hang on a second. Like, people are calling in. You're not going to call in. Nobody's calling in. Okay. Representing Dakota of Tegeta, and we have Alex Collier representing Zenate of Andromeda. So, how do we start? Okay. Elders first. Who's bursting? Who's bursting? Just on you go.
Well, we're all here. That's a great start.
Good one.
Yeah.
So, shall we do a round, first, and, you know, just a brief, like, hi, I'm such and such, and, this is where I come in, and JP was completely wrong about what he said about me. The thing. So, let's start with, Simon and Wynne in that case, and, see how we get going.
All right. Well, I'll kick off then, JP. So I have no problem with progressive mantids, but I've yet to meet a reptilian that was progressive.
well said.
Yeah. It's amazing, really, that, you know, most of my parts are fourth dimensional, and yet my good friend here, who will obviously have a chat in a minute, Wynne Keach, and Alex have strong connections with the fifth. And yet my energy frequency or my belief systems are very much aligned there, because it's about humanity breaking free. It's about humanity overcoming the problems. And many of these problems have been forced on humanity from the fourth dimension. So it's a great opportunity for me. I've got somebody from the fifth dimension sitting to the right hand side of me, and I've got Alex Collier over there. So I'm feeling a bit squashed, as it were, but I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, JP, for organizing it. And I'm looking forward to this evening. Wynne?
Yes, it's reptilian sandwich time, Simon.
Yeah, Some people may
rare, rare, medium, or medium well.
I think he's definitely on the rare end, I suspect. He's a very rare character. Yeah, as you probably know, I've had a very varied life. I've innovated a lot of things. I stopped everybody getting biometric implants by inventing the PIN parts that go on all the credit and debit cards in the world, as is one that most people know me for. A lot of people also know me for my research in UFOs and crop circles over the years, and generally pursuing the human periphery of reality here, and just prodding it and poking it just to see where it gives. So it's very interesting how it all comes full circle. Been a long journey for me, and along that route I found out that I had some pretty heavy karma from my last life, which was a long, long time ago. And this is why I'm here, with a lot of other people from that time, to work out that karma and help humanity move forwards. And that's why I'm driven to innovation, and that's why I'm driven to innovate for the better of people. And I think it bodes well that I've developed such a good friend in Simon, as 100 million years ago or so, I think we'd be beating each other to death with a stick somewhere. But now we're actually working together to move forwards and raise everybody's consciousness. So I think this is a very important time.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Did you say something? No. Anybody?
No. Alex, would you like to come in next?
Sure. It's actually quite a treat for me to be on the radio with the four of you. I assume Jim is listening. So actually the five of you, including JP. And, my soul journey started just over 62,000 years ago when I came in here to set up an outpost and got in the middle of a war and, got snuffed. So I've been here since.
Hello.
Okay, Jim. That's Jim on the call. That's okay. So sorry, Alex. You were here okay. On the away team, and you wore the red shirt, right?
I wore the red shirt. You bet. And got snuffed, and I've been here since. You know, working stuff out, and again, like Wynn suggested, you know, trying to help humanity break free. And, that's what we're going to do. We're going to break free. You know, we're not losing this one. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a similar story for me. I'm afraid, Alex, I was from a little way back before that, but similar situation. I came here as part of that war and I died here. And I've been trapped here ever since. And for some reason, I'm back here now. And that reason is we're at a crossroads for humanity, and we have to see it take the right route.
Well, you know, Wynn, I think next time they sign us up, I think we don't do any drinking, and we read the fine print. You know, before we sign on the dotted lines.
Yeah. I'm also worried about the liability for the damage we caused. It was an interesting karma, though. I mean, I came into this life, and halfway through, I realized I had the karma from the past life, which was tremendous. And you think, how can I work that out in this lifetime? It's just not possible. But then you realize, when you basically understand more and you learn more about the event, you realize that event in itself triggered, stimulated intelligent life in this system. So actually, a lot of the karma was already balanced, but nonetheless, there is an obligation from that time to see humanity through, and I think that's why we're all here.
Well, sometimes, you know, sometimes the pigeon, the view becomes so small that we don't see the bigger picture, and in the end, when we see the big picture, we realize that there was a plan all along. We just didn't know it. We were the last to know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the subconscious driver I'd had to go on this journey to find out as much as I could. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew this when I started, but it took 30 years of searching to find the answers to the questions. And then when you find them, they aren't really what you want to find. But nonetheless, those are the answers. So, yeah.
There you go. There you go. So, Tolik, you're up.
Hi, buddy. I'll chime in on this theme. This seems to be a very interesting time in my life. I am spending a lot of time with mom. She's 85. Dad passed a few years ago. And at 85, I'm sometimes spending time with a woman, my mother, who today is sometimes 6 years old, sometimes 8 years old, sometimes 12 years old, sometimes 72 or 74. I never know which person I'm going to get. And the stories that she tells, she'll start a story with a certain set of people that begin in like 1944, and she'll mix it with some people she knew from 1965, and then she'll bring it into the present with some people she knew in 1990 something or other. And she thinks she's telling all the same story. What I've learned in this process is that for me, I had to get beyond the emotional state of patience into a state of acceptance. Because if I'm trying to be patient all the time, it would never work. Because I'm having certainly a challenging time dealing with somebody who is not in her body that much anymore. She's getting ready to leave. For anybody that's done this in terms of doing some caregiving for an aging parent, it's a very interesting scenario. I'd like to tie into something that JP said early on when JP said, and Simon Parks with progressive mantids and reptilians. I'd like to address the reptilian part, and it has to do with a story that Jim Nichols and I personally were involved in. And Jim, if you're there, kind of chime in as I start to tell the story. But it was about, I want to say, November of 2011, and we decided to go to a higher consciousness discussion on the eastern side of Tucson, and I think it was Wilmot Library. And there was a couple, a young woman in her mid-30s and her partner, her boyfriend, and I would say he was in his late 30s, an oval in this room of about 30-some-odd people. And as Jim and I walked in, we sat down at, if you will, one side of the oval, set up of chairs. And I looked up, and there was this man who, and this happened to be this woman's partner. He had kind of like definitive ridge lines on his forehead, both left and right, somewhat protruding eyebrows, you know, distinct enough that it was noticeable, had a mesomorph kind of build. And she introduced herself, the host, and we introduced ourselves as each person was making the rounds around the room, and it got to me. And before I introduced myself, this gentleman spoke up, and he said, you know, I've been hearing all of you talk about your experiences in the higher realms and the higher dimensions, helping people evolve, helping them to release the things they've come here to, with this planet. And he said, all of you people are talking about predominantly things going on in the fourth and the fifth and maybe a little higher. And he said, I am down here in the muck, in the trenches, dealing with what you might consider to be the second dimension. And all of my clients, private clients, are corporate heads, heads of state, people, men of great power who I won't name. And they're all either reptilian influenced or have a reptilian core essence. And keep in mind, this is 2011. And it's sort of what he said sort of confirmed this physical presence I was seeing in front of me. And he said, and for one of the first times ever, they are starting to say to me individually, maybe I can let a little bit of, and he was being literal, a little bit of light, a little bit of love into my being. I'll try it out. It won't kill me, but I'll try it out. And he said it was unprecedented. And that was 2011, when supposedly some of the first higher dimensional energies, if you will, in space were starting to affect our solar system and our planet. So I tell the story because maybe there is some change, albeit really slow, going on with some a race of people heretofore who've been really aggressive, manipulative, abusive, of certainly Earth humans and many other human souls. But I was blown away by what I heard, and I thanked him for speaking up and for telling his story. Certainly, anybody that wants to comment, feel free. But I looked at Jim and I went, "Wow."
Yes,
you went, "Wow, huh?"
Yeah, hey, I
buddy.
Did.
Hey, I'm sorry to drag in kind of late here. I'm having serious audio problems. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah. So, Jim, okay. You remember? You remember that experience?
Yes, I do. It was interesting. Yeah, very strange. Anyway, who all, are we all online here? Is the whole group gathered here?
Yes. Hello, Jim. Simon here.
Is this Simon Parks?
Yes. Hello, Jim. Nice to hear from you.
Delightful to hear from you, Sam. I apologize for this snafu here, but glad we're all on the round table.
Yeah. Wynn Cage here. I'm here with Simon in England.
Collier, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm in Colorado.
Hi, Alex. Remember, it's been a while since we've seen each other, huh?
Jim, the last time I saw you, we were sitting around a table with Wendell Stevens having a chat.
Yeah, those were the good old days.
And I'm sorry that you lost such a great friend.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Yeah, if I can, add a little to what Tolik has just said. Quite interestingly, quite a lot of people know me for my work with crop circles. And that was over a period of 15 years. And some very strange things happened on that journey. First thing is, I invented the PIN processes that are on all your credit and debit cards and certain computer authentications. And this is part of my consciousness expanding as I got to grips with understanding the crop circle phenomenon, bizarrely enough. I realized halfway through that it wasn't just patterns in a field. It was actually consciousness trying to connect with other consciousness, i.e. myself, but to agree a common security exchange and credential. It was actually a convergence process, and exactly the same sort of process that I was working with daily on PIN authentication. So very, very interesting. But for me, the convergence occurred in July 2007, and I was given a visual symbol to carry. The process is very similar to what's called Diffie-Hellman key exchange, where you start with two keys, or in this case, two consciousness frequencies, and there's a challenge response in an environment that is a converging mathematical function. So each time you go through an iteration of the function, you get closer to converting the credential you both hold to being the same credential. And it's measured by the difference between the two credentials. So this is why the phenomenon, for instance, would create something relatively simple. You would understand it. It would create something more complex. You would understand that. And this process carried on until there was a synchronization. So neither of you are where you started, but at that point, you are at the same frequency of consciousness. And I was given the credential. And in 2010, in July, this is where it's pertinent to Tulip's monologue there, is that that credential, I was given to present it to allow connection back to the UK energy grid, the ley line system, what's called the Grand Cross Convergence. And this is, as far as I can tell, the point where the overtone consciousness frequency entered the world energy grid. And it's from that point that, yes, I started to see people starting to move in two directions in consciousness. The negative people generally became more negative, and the positive people generally became more positive. And what I was shown in confirmation when that process occurred was one final real crop circle, which represented the Earth and a gradation of consciousness grids moving forwards, which showed that there is a frequency doubling of consciousness at each step from this point forwards. And that is in circulation now as energy from galactic center coming to the planet in the ley line system. And this is why you see all this disturbance with atmospheric spraying. You see the fracking to try and disturb the energy systems and water systems underneath the ground. This is the negative factions frantically trying to disrupt this consciousness acceleration, which is rippling around the planet now. So I just thought I'd throw that in. Anybody have anything to say on that? Is this anybody else's experience?
I shouldn't think so, Wynne.
Okay. I know I've had some strange experiences. It's one of them. So, yes, the way it was left with me at the end of that was that basically at a consciousness level, the ingredients are required for mankind to move forwards are now there. They're here on the planet. But the point is that mankind has to take responsibility for itself. And this is the transition period where mankind really has to step up to the plate and make this world the way it should be and make mankind live in the way it should be. And I think that's really what we're all here trying to do.
Yes, I agree. It's a point where humanity is now in a place where they spiritually have to mature. And along with that, or one of the most integral parts of spiritual maturity, is having the vision of who you want to be. What is it that humanity wants to become? What is it that humanity actually wants? Do they really want peace? Do they really want prosperity? Do they really want a clean environment? All of these things. It's taking a little longer because of the disempowerment of humanity that everyone has been subject to through education, through religions. It's taking a little while for humanity to make that turn, but I've been assured that the pillars are set in place. It's going to happen, and as fast as things are moving, sometimes we don't see it as happening fast enough. But it is occurring, and we're getting lots and lots of help. So it's encouraging. The evolvement of the consciousness of this planet and all the races and all the different DNA components that are here mixed in with humanity that's off-world, it's going to make a profound change in our galaxy. And most folks just haven't got a clue as to what that even looks like. But it's encouraging, and it's an exciting time, and I can't wait, frankly. I can't wait.
Yeah, me neither. I think you're absolutely right. I see there's two fundamental issues. Mankind has to be able to visualize what it is it wants, as you say. That's exactly right. And the other thing is that I think there's a small percentage of the population that needs to work as pathfinders. They need to be the people that show this route can be taken and that it's safe to take this route. I think if those two things are in place, mankind will go forwards.
Wouldn't some of the people who are known as whistleblowers, again, some but not all, wouldn't they be considered pathfinders?
Because no, those are people who've, by definition, sat on this information and they could have brought it forwards at some earlier time, or actually become involved in actually making something more positive. It's simply presenting what is already there. I have a maxim, and my maxim is: it doesn't matter what you've done in life; it's what you do next that counts.
Syria.
True.
And
right.
I see whistleblowing is just saying what you've done. And we all know what's gone on. We all know what's done. Everybody at soul level knows what's done, what's been going on here. What's important is how we go forwards. And so I don't see whistleblowers as being a big part of that. They only give comfort to people who actually should have known this information themselves at a soul level.
Right. Intuitively, from a heart space, not from an intellectual space.
Yes, at the end of the day, we are all one consciousness. Every race in this galaxy and universe is one consciousness. But as a race on a particular planet, you're part of the consciousness energy system of that planet. And that information is there. You only have to go and look for it.
It's just, you know, when we fall into physicality, what happens is that sometimes we move further and further away from the light because we get absorbed and focused on the physicality. And then we become forgetful. We forget what our original self is and where that self came from. And it's like being swept away in the waters of forgetfulness. But at some point when you reach a shore and you come out of the water, you begin to see that not only is everything different, but that so are you, because you're further down the water, further down the shore. And when you realize and start looking around where you are, you begin to remember things. And that's sort of where humanity has been. We've we have been so locked into physicality. Much of it has been caused through manipulation, but some of it hasn't. And as we start to come out of that and remember the journey for everyone, whether it's second density, third density, if you have soul, the journey is to just remember who you are, because you're still that being. The core of you, the soul of you, that is still that being. It's just getting back to that original place of where you created your original intention, of what it is that you wanted, what it is you wanted to experience, and of course the reasons why. You know, so we get lost on the journey, but what we don't remember is that it is the journey, but it's also, you're always going to circle back and come home. Always. There's no loss. There's no absolute abyss where you never, ever, ever come back. It's just sometimes you take the long way home. Sometimes you take the short way home.
Yeah, and sometimes it's like a senior moment. You don't quite remember why you're there. That's nice.
Guys, I apologize for getting in here late. Was there a specific topic that we started out this conversation with that I'd missed out on?
No, not really. It's just taking its own form.
It's all right, Jim. You didn't get the memo.
You missed the staff meeting.
Yeah.
We're having bloody audio problems here on our.
All right.
I think our roundtable has been drawing the attention of other folks out there. So anyway, I'm just kind of catching up with what's going on here.
So basically, Jim, it's an opportunity for everybody around the table to ask of each other the questions that they want to ask. No questions from audience. It's just you guys. So away you go.
I
didn't know where you threw out a specific topic to get this thing going on or not. Okay.
He just set the table and we're delivering the course. So.
Very good. Okay. Well, if I may here, I have some a specific question to ask Mr. Parks, if he's available. Simon, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
A little background on myself. I got involved with UFO research back in 1980 when I met Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens here in Tucson. And at the time, he was heavily involved in researching the Billy Meyer UFO contact case in Switzerland. And I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yes.
And I noticed, I've been enjoying your commentary since you had your interview with Carrie Cassidy back on Project Camelot.
Thank you.
And been profoundly impressed by your insights and what you've had to share. And you speak very generally with very general knowledge about the Pleiadians. And I think the Pleiadians themselves have become fairly well known, you know, since the Billy Meyer contact case back in 1980. And although over the years Billy Meyer and that whole case has been dismissed as poppycock and fake and a complete hoax, what interests me is that your description of the Pleiadians is virtually identical to the Pleiadians that are described in Billy Meyer's contact notes. And I was wondering if you had any specific thoughts about that case that you could share with us today.
Well, I've not seen the notes, but it's very funny. Just last week, I'd ordered a couple of models, you know, plastic kits that you can buy. And this came from, was it in South Korea?
South Korea.
And one of them was a Hanibu craft from the Nazi era. And the other was an Adamansky craft. And when I look at some of these models and look at these designs, which, you know, we associate with sort of the late 40s, the 50s and the 60s. We are looking at a very old technology, technology that perhaps is Palladian or a fraction, a splinter group from a Palladian group, might have given technology to a group on Earth. And you wouldn't give a group on Earth the most advanced technology. You would give them something that was very old. In terms of Billy Meyer, I know for a fact the CIA operated from two addresses nearby to him and did surveillance him with cameras all the time. So they felt there was something very, very keen going on. I think what I would say, because I never met the man, is sometimes when an individual has a story to tell, makes that story, gets a great deal of press, and then that information dries up. Some people can't just be comfortable with the fact that, you know, in a month or 2 months or 3 months' time, I will get some more information. Some people want to be in the limelight all the time. They feel they have they've set the ball rolling and they want to be in on that. And we see that with a lot of people in our industry, if you like, where they always want to be on the radio or on the show giving information. And to be honest, they're doing themselves an injustice, because if you run out of things to say or you don't have any information, then you're best to be quiet. And I think in his case, it might have been better to have waited until he'd had some more fresh information. Lots of people have attacked him. Lots of people have attacked me. Lots of people have attacked Alex. But ultimately, if we are being attacked, it's because we're doing something good. Because the bad yeah. guys... Yeah.
Right. That's a rule of thumb, Simon. That's definitely a rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Simon, let me ask you one more question here about the Pleiadians. With that in mind, and more recently, a gentleman called Michael Horn has come forward, who claims to be the spokesman for the FIGU or the Billy Meyer group in Switzerland. And he claims that they really are not Pleiadians. They're called Plejarans. And they come from a different star system altogether, another dimension altogether. And yet what is confusing is that they still refer to the stars in the Plejaran system with the same names that we are familiar with the Pleiadian stars in the system that's in our galaxy, such as Taygeta and Alcyone, etc. This seems very confusing, and I notice that you never refer to Pleiadians as Plejarans. And I was wondering if maybe you could give some clarity on this as well.
Well, I use the term Palladians because when I'm speaking to an audience, I can't just assume that I'm speaking to people who have a great deal of knowledge. Many of us are here to do a wake-up call, which means that we have to use appropriate language, we have to focus the mind, we have to ensure that people on this planet who have very short attention span, we're not just talking about the people who listen to this show, the people who listen to this show are all switched on, but when it goes on to YouTube, I'm hoping that we're going to be able to capture a number of people who are just new to the subject or just tuning in.
Exactly.
And so I've always tried to aim my language so that it was easily understood and... you know, could sow a seed and get on with it. The Palladian group are very ancient and are fractured into a wide range of groups. Some of them are hybridized, but many of them are very old and run their own systems, if you like. So they will use terms and information. Remember, we've got time travel as well. This is something that I don't really talk about greatly because it takes people off the theme or the message that I'm trying to get. But we don't see time in a line. We see it in a circular or a circular movement. And it is possible for entities or beings to use phrases that we are familiar with in this timeline, but also to use phraseology from different timelines. So we shouldn't get hung up on that. Look at these beings and ask yourself, are they talking sense? Are they doing anything or saying anything that is negative to humanity? You know, so many channelers are supposed to be channeling the Palladian group, but when you actually understand it, it's Sumerian or Aldebaran. Back to the initial question. I don't have a problem with different groups of Palladians because I will only judge them in the way that they treat humanity. That's the important point. So you may be a fractured group, you may be a splintered group, but remember that there is not a million miles between an Aldebaran group and a Palladian group. And that's something that would really upset a lot of people in the New Age, if we went to a general conference or a symposium and I was to say, do you know what? Some of the Aldebarans can trace a direct line to the Palladians. Half the audience would walk out because it isn't a message they're prepared to hear. So what we have to try and do is tell them the truth, but do it in a supportive way, because we don't want to lose people. We want to educate them. So I hope that's
I agree with that, and that's why it struck me that this quibbling over Plejarans and Pleiadians seems to just muddy the waters and make it needlessly confusing when we already have kind of a good handle on what our perception of Pleiadians really is.
Can I just add that I think you'll find that, in my case, it was almost certainly Aldebaran influences working through the Nazis and the Thule Society that were actually using the Pleiadian archetype as the format to present it to Billy Myers.
Could you review that one more time? Are you saying that the Billy Meier case was actually German, Nazi?
Well, if you look at the picture he has of Samyaza, for instance,
exactly,
you'll find that that is the Thule Society channel of Mary Osovich. So the photographs are identical. So there is definitely a Nazi link to it. And the area that he was in Switzerland was also an area at the end of the war that a lot of the Nazi technologies fled to. You have things like the Methener commune in that area, which has the Testatica machine. And you find that technology comes from people who are working on those kind of projects, fleeing from Germany into neutral Switzerland. So it was...
Well, then that brings up the question of what... Is there a Pleiadian slash Nazi connection here? Is it Nazis masquerading as Pleiadians, or is it Pleiadians and Nazis working together?
You've got to define what density of link you're looking for. And just about every Northern European, certainly in England, Scandinavia, has genetic roots back to a Pleiadian DNA source. Not so much
Nazi, but more the Vril Society, because they seem to be a little less hostile and aggressive. And it seems to me that the ladies of the Vril Society would have been very compatible with the Pleiadian.
Of course they would. They would have the genetic predisposition. What I'm trying to say is there are a lot of races that pretend to be something that they aren't when they interact with humanity. And the Palladian form, certainly the human Palladian Nordic form, is a very widely understood archetype amongst humans. So
exactly. It would
make perfect sense for them to use that form to their advantage to present them.
Exactly.
And it's okay. One of the reasons when you first asked me the question and I talked about the models that I bought, I was trying to say that these models are very, very early craft, which have a very strong connection to Palladian line, but also to other lines. And so those early alien craft actually show a history that goes back. When I look and think about the power plant of those craft, they're incredibly primitive from an alien standpoint.
Okay.
And you can see the linkage coming in from Nazi Germany. That's very clear. So whoever was working with those key people in the 50s and 60s had a very strong German connection, whoever they might have been.
Exactly. Well, that's interesting because Billy Meier claims to have had contact with a lady from the Pleiades called Samyazi. But she spoke fluent Austrian German, and she was very knowledgeable about the German saucer projects during World War II.
Absolutely, that's why she was part of that system going on in development in Germany. She was one of the channelers that actually brought the information that allowed German technologists to develop the replica vehicles.
Well, very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, I have to say, Jim and I have discussed this on a previous show, and it's completely concurrent with what you guys are talking about just now. So that's fantastic.
Well,
this is the whole thing.
This is one of the most confusing aspects of the whole Billy Meier UFO case, is that, well, are we looking at flying saucers from the Pleiades, or actually are we showing updated versions of the old Nazi honeybooters? And it's like, okay, we can pretty well confirm that, yes, he did actually photograph large objects, unidentified objects, at some distance from the camera, but there was no way to prove whether they were Pleiadian or German or whatever.
Indeed, yeah. And now we've been learning about the fact that they have been making these things and that they were well in production by the time that Billy Meyer got to see them, and that the whole thing could be what we now call a false flag. And
exactly.
I've often, you know, if we expand our consciousness to think that the universe works just like it does here on Earth, but kind of on a larger scale, that there are larger scale false flag operations that have happened in the past, and that certain people have been blamed. And I have the feeling that the whole Maldek incident was like a kind of 9/11 to lay blame on the Pleiadians, because everybody hates the Pleiadians in this solar system, apparently, from what I hear. So, any comments on that, gentlemen? Anybody got any intel on that whole thing?
Yes. You know I do.
Yeah. Okay, I'll
weigh in also, but go ahead.
Yeah, that was the point I died. So yes, I remember that quite well. And no, it was a full on war between reptilian forces and Pleiadian Lyran forces, and also forces from Canis. It was a real mess. It was a desperate do or die. The mission I was on was a suicide mission, and I duly died doing it. And what a lot of people don't understand is it wasn't just the reptilians and the spirituality and the turf war that stretched across the whole galaxy with that conflict for eons. It wasn't that that was the absolute cruncher for that interdiction. It was the AI systems that the reptilians brought with them into this system. That's why it was on a genocide level, in fact, a planet-side level of attack. It was the only way to stop the advance of the AI system beyond the bounds of this demarcation point. If that's of any help to anybody.
Well, now you brought the AI into it now.
Well, I'm afraid they brought it. Your lot brought it along with them.
My lot?
Yeah, they transhumanized themselves.
Well, that truce didn't last long, did it?
I mean, it was actually, people only focused on the attack on Maldek. It was actually a two-pronged attack. What actually happened is a series of very large ships carrying and deploying troop ships, actually traveled interdimensionally, appeared, slowed down, deployed the ships, and two waves attacked. One attacked Mars, one attacked Maldek. I was on the Mars attack. I was on one of two ships that their job was to detonate in the northern hemisphere, in the atmosphere, to cause a massive EMP pulse to disrupt the AI command and control system on Mars that was defending Maldek, where the main colony was. And the other ships, their job was to penetrate the crust and destroy Maldek. Because all the ships were actually the same, the actual detonation on Mars was larger than was necessary, and it caused an awful lot of collateral damage. And Alex will, I'm sure, will chip in. This is one of the reasons the Andromedans have some reservations about Pleiadians from the past.
You're too violent, you are.
Well, people think of, it's an unpopular thing, but people think of the Pleiadians as being just love and light. But at that time, it was a bitter fight, and there really wasn't much to tell between the reptilians and the Pleiadians as to how bitter a fight that was and how total that war was. And it's only afterwards that this solar system and a big part of this galaxy actually stabilized. This solar system was left in turmoil. The debris from that incident destroyed the dinosaurs 65 million years ago.
Well, where the oceans came from, yeah.
Where some of the oceans on Earth came from. Mm-hmm. Also some of the transpermia DNA to this planet. But it also triggered the advance of your mantid mum's species. Yeah. They became accelerated in their evolution, and they were able to...
Well, that's a point, because many people don't understand that the mantids actually started here.
Yes.
They all think they're either ETs or what have you. They don't actually understand that there's a that's just a cat. very large.
Big cat, right. Major league feline.
Oh, that's in Mars. Yes, that incident really kind of mixed up the system.
Yeah.
Because obviously Earth at that time was just, was actually a minor planet, but it was basically a genetic zoo for the reptilians. They're trading in genetic material. And when this incident happened, it really stirred the pot up. And that's how things like the mantid race grew in stature, grew in intelligence, eventually developed spaceflight and left the system. A lot of things changed at that point.
Well, if I could jump in here, let me just ask you that let's bring us up to date. There was a great galactic war here a long time ago. Has that war ever ended? And my question is, you look at the proliferation of weaponry since World War II, especially atomic weaponry. It would seem like, it would almost seem as if, the powers that be are ramping up for yet another episode of this galactic conflict. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think that's actually the process that's going on. What's actually happened is some of the fallout of this is that various species were trapped in the system. They couldn't get away again. It was such a total devastation that the routes that people took here just didn't exist. I know my soul was trapped here. I know a lot of other people's souls that were trapped here. And a lot of these entities had the technology for soul transfer from body to body, and they've been here ever since, living in a very peculiar fashion. But what they don't have locally was the infrastructure to recreate the technology level they had at that time. And that's, in the recent history, I see anything less than a million years as recent history, is what has happened here with opportunist species that are in this system, that have stimulated mankind and actually messed with them along the way to get them to do the donkey work, to make the technology, to
do all the work for them.
Dig everything out of the ground, smelt it down, make it into circuitry, make it into consumer high-end objects, and recreate the technology that was lost millions of years ago. And now,
right, but if you look at the obsession with ramping up military technology and space-based weapons and so forth, it seems like somebody in this group is looking to get back into the fight again. And you can't tell me that we're creating this weaponry, you know, just to fight wars in the Middle East. I mean, this is to me somebody wants to slug it out with somebody that's out in space, and what's going on this planet is totally irrelevant to that.
They're just trying to catch up, and they've ridden on the back of mankind to do that. What the fundamental thing is that those species live in a frequency of fear. And it's not about being able to make a fist to be able to fight back. It's about trying to reduce their level of fear. They want to have the toys back. They want to have the weapons back to feel more secure because they've felt exposed for a long, long time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
Jim, this is Tolek. Jim, also keep in mind the fact that, and Alex knows this full well, when there's a large amount of war and anger and abuse and all sorts of the topics that fall under the category of fear that are generated. And the more they are generated, the more that the remaining reptilians on this planet are happy. Why? Because as we've all discussed before, it's energetically, it's something that they feed off of. It's almost like a drug for them. The more fear, the better. The more war, the better. The more terror, the better. Because they feed off of it. It's something they enjoy. And so as long as they have influence in this sector of the galaxy, they're going to keep
promoting. Well, you can generate all the fear you want here, but you don't need space-based weapons to do it. I mean, I understand that if you look at our culture, it's totally fear-generated, but then why would you need a secret space-based weapons program in your hip pocket? I mean, that tells me that it's almost as if they're afraid somebody's going to come here and take away their food source. So it's like they're prepared to slug it out with whoever would interfere with that.
They're afraid their food source is going to turn on them. That's the problem.
Mm. Jim, one of the things with what's called the space race is that the plan that some of these psychopathic madmen want is to implant large numbers of humanity, and then with satellites in space, each individual person's transponder on their chip would be identified, and then to be murdered from outer space. So one of the huge points they've been trying to do is to put lots and lots of satellites passing them off as civilian communication satellites. And that is exactly what they're trying to do. And you know, go back to an earlier point. They are at war with each other. You know, I talk to not a huge range of people, but I talk to some people who are very high up in corporations in the United States who have the same views that we have. You know, there are good people in these places, and they are at war with the absolute psychopaths. So what we are see on the streets is actually taking place at the highest level. And I don't think that any advance in science will bring these people what they want. And they are just literally trying to find comfort and not face the question they need to face, which is which side of the fence are they on. And I've always said it, as the hands of the clock reach midnight, you know, there will come a point when they cannot make a choice any longer. It's too late. So, you know, I always use my little radio show to ask these people to turn their backs on this nastiness, this evilness, and to start working for good, to listen to their own soul and their own heart. But you're right. All this money which has been used on these black projects could have lifted tens of billions of people out of poverty, and we could have had a much happier society. So it's just a harder struggle for us, isn't it? We've just got to keep going till we do it.
Well, Simon, let me hitchhike on that a little bit. If you look at the history of the human race, and I think you could agree we're a hybrid race, and that it seems that, I hate to admit it, but we're a dysfunctional family on this planet. And yet I would strongly suspect that those entities or whoever created us in the first place were dysfunctional. So what you see in the human culture is a reflection of the dysfunctional, psychology that was in those entities that created us in the very first place.
Yeah, we're a traumatized species that's living in amnesia.
Yes, I mean, this is the point, that humans weren't created. Humans were always here. Humans have been sovereign. What was happened was that others who had more technology but weren't necessarily more spiritual, in fact, I'm damn sure they weren't as spiritual as we were, used their positions of knowledge for wrong and tricked people and change them. And if you take a young family, say you take a brother and a sister, say 5 and 6 years old, and their parents go out to work one day and the parents never come back, those two young children have to learn themselves, and therefore they have no parenting skills. They don't understand the difference between right and wrong, and they have nothing given to them. And what happened to the humans, the earth humans on this planet, was that they were given a whole history which was fake. They were given rules and values which were wrong. And until people can actually look inside themselves and begin to question and check and understand how they've been tricked. You know, and I say to people, humans aren't stupid. They're just naive, because they are so good that they can't believe that the people they've elected would actually do any harm to them. They can't accept that, because generally they wouldn't do that. So why would these people who are better than me, because, hey, I elected them, and they must know more than me. And the problem is, until we can break that and understand that we're all equal and we all have something to share, humanity will be led by the nose. And that's why people like me and everyone else who tries hard, we're trying to break that. But we can't force people. We can't say you have to. We have to just keep trying and putting it forward. So what I'm saying, I think, is that I don't lose patience with people because I understand that they haven't got the full truth. And that's, I think, where we are. We're trying to get people to be on a balanced little playing field.
Are we going to get that balance? You think within the next year or two? I know you've spoken on occasion that we're really at a nexus point here.
Right. Well, we're behind schedule. What happened? We were doing really well. I know Wynne would agree on this. We were doing really, really well in terms of advancing, and then some. I don't know if it was reptilian or it was demonic or what it was, but there was a blast of energy that was put onto the planet, and it literally held things up. And now we're using an American term, we're trying to walk through molasses. So
yes,
there was a stalemate, as we'd say in this country. And I think that things are swinging back, and we know when things are swinging back in a positive sense because the evil guys get more desperate. And back in the fall, I'm very good at my American terms, aren't I? Yes. Back in the autumn, as we say in Britain, and the fall, as you guys say, I predicted that the next false flag would be Belgium. Now, I didn't have a date for it, but I have been saying that March, April would be difficult, and we've had our first false flag with the Belgian bombs, and this year and next year we're going to see more of these pathetic, stupid attempts by these psychopaths to try to traumatize people. And yeah, we are going to get there. This is the seventh time that this planet has been in this position, but we've never quite been this good. We've never quite got this far. And I actually think this time we're going to do it. The question for me is, what condition are we going to be when we come out on the other side?
Very true. You know, it's interesting here in the United States, they're flying the flags at half staff today because of the Belgian incident. But it's getting to where they fly the flags at half staff constantly. So, well, why bother to even run the flags all the way up to the top of the pole? These absurd terrorist acts are going on with such frequency now. It's like the flags are at half staff constantly.
Yeah, this is totally. You know, there are so many. I understand the topic we're discussing from a global perspective, but when we say collectively we, and I know that we're talking about we as a collective human race of many different cultures with different cultural values and different cultural religions, inherent in the religions is programming. People have been programmed through the various Christian faiths or any other religions that are organized to follow. And until, this is my belief, until people stop following blindly and until they start going into their hearts and until each and every person decides they want to evolve beyond the boxes that they've been brought up in and the paradigms and the rules that they've been taught, I see it as a difficult proposition to say collectively we as a whole, all of us, are going to evolve into the next higher level of consciousness, into the next even dimension, if you will. I think some will and some are not going to, because I don't, you know, we still have a lot of, this is only my opinion, but we still have a lot of very immature adults on this planet from a spiritual perspective, from an emotional perspective, that haven't begun to ask some deep questions yet. And I want to throw that out to everybody else, but that's just, you know, the collective we is, there's a lot of different we's in here. And I just don't think that the totality of the human race is going to evolve. I think some will and some won't. Just my humble opinion.
Yeah, well,
if I can step in and say something, Kolek, you're right. Not everybody is going to, and not everybody was meant to. Listen, the regressives that have been building these weapons, they have been put on notice. And it began several years ago when our space fleet was contacted by star groups from the future. And they enlightened them as to where this is going and what happens. They went back and they basically delivered a message. And this is why you're seeing a full ramp up, to go back to Jim Nichols' question. Yes, Jim, they are ramping up, because they know that what's going to happen is that a force is going to somehow, some way, and is intervening to free humanity from this group, because this group simply refuses to change its mask. They simply refuse to let go of their fear. They simply refuse to integrate themselves with the rest of the galaxy, they just simply won't, they won't make a change. And in the future, they literally be, their actions now become a threat, a serious threat to the entire galaxy. That is not going to happen. They are not going to be allowed to do this. So they are cornered and they know it. Now the things that are happening here are multidimensional. Okay. There is no way they can stop this. And it's going to happen. But again, ultimately, because each individual has to make the choice themselves to either go to the light or not, or to be confused or not, then that's a choice they're going to have to make. In the end, however, it's going to be extremely positive. Humanity is going to come out on the other end of this, and it's going to be an incredibly positive experience, not to mention self-empowering. But the learning curve here is going to be dramatic, and it's going to be wicked fast, because people are going to have to wake up really quick, and those who are willing and open, they will, in fact, get this education. They will realize their full potential. They will understand what, in fact, has been going on. Now, there are many groups that are here, ET groups, even walk-ins who are system busters. I believe that's the term that was used years ago, that are here doing the work. So this is coming at them in a multiple way, and they simply cannot deal with it. They're doing what they've always known to do, and that is to create fear and build weapons.
Right.
But their day is done. It just hasn't played itself out yet.
And at this moment,
I'm so glad you brought that up, because what it points out is that it's not so much that they become a threat, you know, the powers that be are a threat to this planet, but they become a threat to, off-world planets, off-world civilizations. And it's like, well, it's like the, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Do we just sit back and let the Russians build all the nuclear
That's
weapons
right.
they want in Cuba? And let them do their thing, or we step up to the plate and say, no, enough is enough is enough.
Gentlemen.
You will not be allowed to proliferate your weaponry all over the universe and unleash your AI robots out into space. This has got to stop now.
JP.
At this point, it's bladders all over the world are straining. At the no. Anyway, I'm going to play a couple of tunes so everybody can just not listen to the tunes because they're just like, you know, music. I'm going to play some music that I wrote. And then, you can go and make tea and coffee and, you know, just kind of relax everything about yourself and, come back for the next hour of this amazing conversation. Thank you very much. I'm talking with Simon Parks, Alex Collier, Wynn Keach, Jim Nichols, and Tolek, in no particular order. This is Sagittarius B. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Oh yes, you're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, and it's the Easter Sunday. Ah, all these bunnies going around doing things with ducks. Is it ducks or chickens? How do bunnies get the eggs? I don't know. Chocolate chickens and bunnies. I don't know how this whole thing works. It's almost like the official story of 9/11. None of it makes sense. Anyway, so here we are: Tolek, Jim Nichols, Wynne Keach, Simon Parks, Alex Collier. Where were we? Jim was the last person to say something, and I just want to add one little drop of spice into the soup. I just want to say, those pesky Aldebarans. That's all I want to say.
if I can add something,
please.
Finish. Okay. Many groups, in particular some human groups from different star systems, they tended to go with where the power is. They tended to get political, because of so many long protracted wars that have occurred in our galaxy between humans and non-humans and reptilians and AI. Everyone is pretty much exhausted of war. And it's not hard to understand that, because we're exhausted of war as well on this planet. So, I just wanted to add that the situation that occurs in the future isn't going to happen. It's already been altered. And it literally is contained in this time, this present time. The key, though, to really making this thing move in a positive fashion is us, the people. And there is movement. It could be faster. I think everybody out there wants it to be faster, but they're very patient with us because they understand the incredible hardships that humanity has had to bear with all the negative intervention and manipulation that's occurred. And I can honestly tell you, they're amazed at how we still have such fortitude and such basic common goodwill for each other, and how we all pretty much want the same things, and how we still find a place to create love in our lives. There, I can tell you that, you know, when we get to the other side of this, humanity will have some things to teach the rest of the galaxy. Because no one has gone through what we're going through. Not even close. And it's certainly not for the length of time we've had to deal with that. So, I just want you to know that the situation is pretty much contained, but unfortunately, in our solar system, these things have to play out, and they're going to. I also want you to know that the Terran space program, the benevolents who are out there beyond the asteroid belt, they are fully aware of who each crew is, because again, they're from the future. And not only are they aware of the crew, but also their intent. So there is quite a bit going on. And at last I heard, many of the crews were being sequestered and quarantined somewhere behind the moon. They weren't allowed to travel, because these crews are our crews. They were finding out how much they were being used and manipulated, and they're not at all happy with the role that they have been forced to play or were manipulated into playing, so that there's dissension amongst the ranks all the way down and all the way up. And there's a very small core group of reptilians and AI that are desperately, drastically trying to maintain control, their control of their minions. And it's only a matter of time before all the dominoes fall and it's over, and it's over for them. They will implode into their own fear and their own darkness. So what we need to do is just stay focused, try to stay positive, continue to get people, encourage people to be positive, to reach and create what it is that they really want, you know, to focus on things that they really, really want that are positive and beneficial for them and for their families. And, you know, be the observer, not to buy into all this shit that's being created, try to draw us, you know, away from positive energy, positive field, into a negative field. We simply cannot feed these beings any longer. We just can't feed them. We have to starve them out of here. And that's all I got.
Would you say, at what level, and I put this out to everybody here, at what level would you say, is there a quarantine zone around the planet? Is it around the planet and the moon? Would it extend all the way to Mars, the asteroid belt? Is there, in fact, a quarantine zone, and who is manning the quarantine zone?
My understanding is that it goes out to the asteroid belt, and it's being manned by no less than 48 different star races.
Okay. Would the Pleiadians and the Mantids be part of that group?
Well, I can't speak for the Mantids. That would be
Simon could probably answer.
That would be the other distinguished gentleman. As far as the Ps, I know that some of the Ps are involved. I can't say which particular system they're from, but a majority of the situations we have, as far as it allowing to get this bad, is the result of some Pleiadian groups not stepping up. They simply didn't want to step up. And
right.
You know, in hindsight, and for their reasons, it's understandable they were exhausted of war.
Right.
But nonetheless, they weren't capable of doing it on their own. And then they thought they could, but they couldn't. So now there is a very, very large contingency here to back them up and to assist them. And there's an even bigger contingency behind them, because everyone's done with war. We're over it. Everybody's over it. So,
it's interesting.
This last group.
Media, in fact, yeah, in the media, we have this new version of Independence Day coming out on 4th of July, which once again is the celebration of xenophobia, that the evil aliens are on their way to attack us once again. And I just wonder if in fact that the false flag is that the evil aliens have already taken over here, and it's the liberators that are coming to put an end to this nonsense, and that's you're getting this reverse psychology in the media.
Well, I think I personally think that's a part of it. My feeling is that the next false flag is going to be a pretend second coming, that they're going to play out the second coming. They're going to try to fool everyone into becoming property, into buying into a belief system, a world religion belief system that they have to follow this new leader, and this new leader is going to lead them back into war. That's what I've been told to look out for, that they're going to play this thing out. Because humanity has had this taught to them for 2,000 years. Everybody's waiting for it.
Exactly. Well, that's where they fall back to their original game plan.
Right. But that's the last. That's their last straw.
Right.
I think what strikes me there, and I absolutely agree with everything that Alex has said, I would just add that what is unique here is that for the first time, many, many different races actually decided to work together. Until that point, there had been a number of races which had been involved on Earth trying to redress the balance. And then it got to the point where they realized that if the cancer wasn't stopped here, it would just spread everywhere. And so a number of separate councils were formed, which went right across groups, as long as there was humanity in their genetics. And they all decided that they would work together, by and large, to bring this about. Now, they had to do it because what they were facing was an adversary who didn't play by any rules at all. And individually, they were hard-pressed to overcome what was here. But by joining together, and they are above, many of these races are above the sixth dimension. Some of these races are quite high, offering energy technology and allowing things to occur which are not in the physical sense. And then you've got your fifth and your sixth dimensions who are very much in the physical sense. And it's that which I think was the most heartening, to see all of the different groups who can all trace some connection to humanity here on the planet, all have some responsibility, all have some understanding, and decided to put aside their individual concerns or their individual we don't get involved, and have worked together. And that, I think, is wonderful. And when that happened, and it's very recent, actually, as time goes, that was a big flag that was raised, so that the negative forces knew that now something greater than them was actually opposed to them. So no longer were they fractured and individual being picked off. They were working as one. And that's when humanity, I think, took a great leap on this planet. So, you know, I think we all agree, it sooner rather than later, I can't wait for it to come. It will be difficult, but we need to get through it. We need to do it. And the sooner we get into it, the sooner we can come out the other end. So yeah, I think what Alex is saying is right there, no longer now how people being careful, the gloves are off, and we've seen a lot of very, very interesting activity under the earth, on the surface of the earth, and above the earth as well.
Well, now that you mentioned under the earth, there's a question I'd like to ask Simon. I don't know if you realize or you've heard that a recent posting on the internet claims that within the NASA or the NSA files that whistleblower Edward Snowden released, there is discussion that about the reality of inner Earth civilizations, that there are a more intelligent group of Homo sapiens that actually lives within the mantle of the Earth, not necessarily the center of the Earth, but intelligent species, intelligent civilizations that actually live and have lived for a long, long time within the mantle of the Earth. Would you care to comment on that, Simon?
I'm happy to. There's more than one group. There is a native form of reptilian, for a start, that doesn't wish to really be involved with humanity. Isn't aggressive unless it's bothered. Mm-hmm. There are a form of humanity that can trace its link back to Atlantis and Lemuria, who have taken themselves away. And you think about Admiral Byrd, who went and had a little look and ran away very quickly. Uh-huh. So there are groups. I mean, I have one very strong memory of... I'll just quickly split that it's really lovely that Alex talks about Manet and Visayas, and these guys gave him their real names. But of course, my creatures come from the fourth dimension, and they don't give real names in the fourth dimension, and I got stuck with Mum and Dad. And when I visit Dad, I visited him once, what appeared to be in an underground chamber, it was almost like a fourth dimensional recreation. So in other words, he was incapable of living in the Earth's natural energy, that don't breathe oxygen for a start. So they had to create their own environment. And this is what we were talking about. A lot of the energy that they take from the planet, from the people on the planet, they use to maintain an environment in which they can survive. It's not quite the fourth dimension. It sits between the third and the fourth. It's almost an interdimensional space.
If an explorer went climbing down into the inner Earth, would they actually physically experience this civilization, or is it beyond our physicality?
No, because these creatures could take the third dimensional form. Uh-huh. So yes, you could be, and Alex will absolutely understand this, you could be walking down a corridor and then a reptilian, shall we say, type creature could emerge, and that reptilian creature already knows what seven or eight guys in that corridor are thinking, what they're going to do, who's going to do it first, and they are, it makes them very, very difficult characters to deal with. But to your answer your question, yes, you would ultimately find ancient technology, but then you would find more advanced technology built on the back of that old technology. And Admiral Byrd was given, my understanding, he was given a demonstration. You know, you don't want to start a war, and Alex says it, we're all sick of it. So Admiral Byrd was given a demonstration of their power, and so he just packed his bags and came home again.
Well, it's very interesting because within the Snowden document, it stated that the president himself receives daily briefings about the activities of these underground civilizations. And also, it says they had contingency plans to detonate nuclear weapons in deep caverns to sting the enemy down there as if it would discourage further attacks or further confrontations with this highly advanced technology, which sounds absolutely ludicrous to me that we would be so stupid as to attempt that.
Well, all I can tell you is there's an exchange program that the American administration, regardless of which president is in power, that really doesn't have any bearing on it whatsoever. But there are individuals down there who can give reports and updates, and it's a diplomatic move.
Exactly.
Okay. And that's what's occurring. So the president, through the National Security Council, is just getting a watered-down version of what the NSA is actually getting itself. The council is only getting a small part of it. But it was part of a deal to keep the peace because these underground locations were neither seen as threatening nor friendly. They were seen as neutral forces which could tip the balance if they threw their lot in with one side or the other.
Exactly.
So that's where they are with it.
That's the way they portrayed themselves to Admiral Byrd. It's like, we understand that you're playing with nuclear weapons at this point, but at, you know, if this is your issue, this is, we're not going to step in one way or the other. If you want to destroy yourselves, that's your problem.
Well,
we're going to stay out of this. No, I
don't think so, because the damage that would be caused on the surface of the planet would be so catastrophic that it would actually have an effect on anyone who couldn't contain themselves in an energy field underground. If you think about the future, one timeline future where the elite take themselves underground and get converted into small little greys, you know, that's one of the issues that we have to be careful of, this penchant or penchant for rushing underground and protecting themselves. I think basically what was said was the threat that could occur was so great that both sides were forced to come to a diplomatic view. I don't think anybody who is spiritually advanced would even want a nuclear war. It's only the psychopaths or the crazy people who think they can hide underground for 20 years and then come out and inherit the Earth. I mean, it's just insane.
Right. Well, the inner Earth people, as I understand, as I read the text, really sent Admiral Byrd back to Washington as an ambassador for them to speak on their behalf and to try to encourage the administration in Washington to back off from the nuclear proliferation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you must understand that Admiral Byrd was chosen because he was a very calm, steady, solid person who, when confronted with something, quote, out of this world, wouldn't go to pieces. And so
they complimented him on that aspect of his character also.
Right, I didn't know.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. So it did
It's like they picked him specifically because of his character, so you'd be the best person, you know, to speak as an ambassador for us on this.
Mm.
Very interesting.
Well, it did buy the peace, largely in terms of that particular administration with that particular group.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Hello? Hello, anybody there?
A moment of pause. Interesting. It's just exactly at the 90-minute mark.
I would like to ask Alex something. Alex, what information do you have about the old base on the Moon and Mars, Adam and Eve? Do you think there were any humans left after the attack?
Well, I don't have anything new. The focus has not been on the outer planets at all, just our planet as of late. But I will tell you that there were some survivors, and they managed to pick up and continue on. And I know that there are treaties in place, and several groups are learning to live together. Preface that, learning to live together. I don't believe that Mars is being used as a staging area to attack the Benevolence, which is why it's being left alone. I think pretty much the what's happening is that there are specific planetoids in the asteroid belt that were being used as a staging platform to sell weapons to other groups, rogue groups, as well as to attack fleets and ships that were passing through from one galaxy to another. All of that is halted, and essentially what's happening is that the rogues have been sequestered here on Earth. And to my knowledge, what's happening on Mars, is that they are transcending the earthly politics and all the earthly alien behavior. They are transcending that and learning to live together and actually keeping their word with the other groups. But that's all I have. Again, I don't have anything other than that because the conversations have been mostly about humanity, you know, digging ourselves out of this hole and awakening from our own coma, so to speak.
Thanks, Alex. I just had a personal, it was just a personal thing that there were some survivors from those two bases. That's all it was.
Yes, there were.
Thanks.
This is Tolik. I can provide some commentary around that topic. And it also involves discussion about AI and the use of reptilian AI. There was an AI generator on the moon of Mars called Phobos, and that was taken out sometime, I believe, during late 2011 by the Procyon people of the Andromeda Council. And it had been going on for a long, long time. So that one's gone. Regarding the topic of a catastrophic event, if you will, Alex, that you know about some X number of years, 300 plus years in the future, that topic.
Or 800.
Ah, okay. That topic actually has to do with the original reptilian agenda to do a complete transformation and conversion of human DNA and human frequency on this planet into reptilian. Their plan had been essentially to create their own kind of like feeding ground. And you are correct, because of the actions of a number of benevolent people in a number of different councils, including the Andromeda Council, they came back from the future and said, this is not going to happen this way. This is not going down. And one of the cause and effects of this decision and these actions include a number of Andromeda Council biospheres and other benevolents that have biospheres that are ringing this solar system. There's there are a number of biospheres that are protecting the solar system with, if you will, an energetic bubble, as well as three biospheres that I'm aware of that are protecting this immediate Earth space as well. And it's a twofold reason. Not to allow any regressives to come back in, and also to keep those few reptilians, those few pure reptilians that are stuck here on this planet, they can't get out. They're not going anywhere. And I think what you said, or I'll paraphrase what you said, I think what you said is quite accurate. In time, they're simply going to implode on themselves. Their terror, their anger, their fear, whatever they're using in terms of attempted control of the people on this planet to their own ends is simply going to consume themselves. And the best thing that people, and this is, again, this is only a humble opinion, but I think the best thing that people can do is find ways to stay calm, to improve their lives, to help others, to educate those people who are interested, who are curious, that want to be educated. But the process of knowing self and becoming true to self is so important, and it keeps a level of calmness in place where there might not be one. Just some comments on my side. And feel free, anybody, to jump in.
I have a question for both Alex and Simon. At this point, would, if the reptilians are perceiving that they're getting back further and further into a corner where they're becoming more and more desperate to cling to their little bit of power here, would at some point would they use the human race collectively as a bargaining chip? As hostage, just like if we don't get to have our way, we'll destroy all the human race. Period. Is that a disturbing component to this aspect or to this issue?
If I go first, then maybe Alex will come in. They have a fallback plan,
right.
Which mustn't be allowed to happen.
Right.
All planets have consciousness, and the living creatures on them, advancing. And evolving is natural. Now, in the fourth dimension, there are a lot of bad guys, and these particular bad guys are stuck in an energetic bubble. And one of the ways you think if you're a bad guy, you can get yourself out of it is by, as we would say, hooking onto the shirt tails of a race that was going to evolve. So if you knew that a massive burst of energy was going to be released, as one group made some advancements, you might attempt to catch in on that and try and be through with it. Now, the planet's not going to have that, and consciousness is not going to have it, and only those, as Alex understands, those who have understood themselves, understood and made a choice, a positive choice, they will be the ones that will actually come forward. So this is a false hope that these creatures have, but that's what they're pinning their hope on, that they can sometimes do that. And some of the cloning and hybridization projects that have been undertaken are linked to this supposed we can get out of the trap we're in, because otherwise what will happen is that the fourth dimension will see a mini dimension with inside it. So there will be some very negative entities who are making their own prison, and they will not be able to get out of it. Now, these creatures are very intelligent, and they've seen the future. They've planned it. They've seen it. And as Alex knows, there have been a number of times where the timelines have tried to be changed and have changed back. We are on a positive timeline, positive in the sense that it is human consciousness that is now calling the shots and not some small group. So there will only be one outcome, and that is an advancement. So until these, and you're right, Tolik, there's only a small group of Draconis reptilians left now on the planet. Some of them walk as I joke with Wynn, walk the corridors of the Vatican. They need to understand that there is no get out of jail card. what they've got to do is to be very, very proud of their culture, but they need to give up certain elements of their culture which teach them that they are better than anybody else, and that they are equal. Now, if they can do that, there is a place for them in the wider society. If they can't, then there's no place for them. You know, and I have very, very close connections with these creatures, but I can see that they are going to destroy themselves unless they make a change. And that's what they need to do. And if they don't make a change, they can't blame anybody but themselves. So I think that they have a master plan, which is completely false and won't give them what they want. But they're like these psychopath humans who run countries. They just hell-bent and they just won't see reason. And it has to play out.
But you don't see them using the human race as hostages here.
No, I don't. Not in that sense. No, I don't think they'll say, unless you do what we want, we'll blow you up, because they need people. That's the whole point of this.
Right.
They always needed people. They didn't want to kill people off. The supposed killing off of 75% of the planet is not coming from alien species. That's coming from hybridized and homegrown Earth humans who are that's what I call the psychopaths. But no, they won't do that. What the reptilians want is a status quo. It's worked for hundreds of thousands of years. Let's have it work for more hundreds of thousands of years. And they are facing a situation that these creatures have never faced in their life. They are facing a dead end. And they are having to look at themselves. Now, whether they'll change, I honestly don't know. I hope they do.
Well, the deal is that we're all facing it with them. I mean, you go outside and look at the chemtrails and say, what the hell's going on here?
No.
And you see how the environment's being poisoned and everything. It's like, it's like we're all in this together. One way or another.
Well, we are, but, you know, the changes that are occurring are positive. And I actually think that even if I look back over the last 5 years, the human race has taken some fantastic steps forward. You know, in this country, we had a most horrible man called Jimmy Savile, who for over 45 years was a paedophile and preyed on children. One of the worst crimes in any galaxy you can do. So for 45 or nearly 50 years, this was hidden from people. And then suddenly human consciousness began to rise and these elite couldn't hide it any longer. And what we're seeing is that governments are finding it harder and harder to hide lies from their own civilians, their own populations. And there will come a point when they can no longer hide and the truth will be out. And the question is whether people will forgive or not.
Well, that's the beauty of internet and the expanded media here, where it's harder to keep secrets like that anymore. So, it's like the whole human race is talking to itself here, you know. And this is unprecedented in human history. The fact that we're doing this show here, that we're talking about these topics, it's like this in itself has got to be creating like an exponential increase in human consciousness here. And to such a level that I suspect the reptilians themselves hadn't anticipated it being this successful.
Well, can I just chip in and say that there's been a complete shift of the balance and balance of perception. And it's gone from us being trapped in here with them to them realizing that now they're trapped in here with us. Mm-hmm. It's a complete swing around. And it's now... We just have to pick a positive future and make it happen now.
Yeah, we got to have each other's back, no matter what. We have to have each other's back, and we have to see ourselves as one family, and we have to stop all this other nonsense. And the regressives, they are so in a corner, all they can do now is try to figure out how to protect themselves, which is why there is so much going on and there's so much more freedom coming about. You know, they're still, of course, very dangerous. But, you know, the using us as hostages, they were called on that a couple years back. And, you know, they realized that they couldn't use that chip. So they went to the weapons route. That's not going to work. No way is that going to work. Not against fifth, sixth density beings. No way is that going to work. So,
the other option is to go to AI, right?
Well, that's not going to work either. They tried that. They tried sending AI into fifth density, and they found it. They caught them, so they know. And that's what CERN was all about.
Right.
You know, was to try to send things into the portal, and get it out of here to change. In other words, give them something to think about so that they would leave. That didn't work. So it's all blown up in their face. We are just now in the countdown to truly being a free race. But you know, once that happens, we have no excuses ourselves. We have got to step up and start behaving, you know, like spiritual adults and take care of each other, take care of our planet, represent our solar system in a mature, responsible manner. It just got to happen. And I believe with the right mentoring, this can absolutely turn around pretty quickly. And Jim, as far as the environment, they could clean it in a week.
Right.
You know, benevolence could come in and clean the environment within a week. So it isn't that far gone. Don't believe that for a minute.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, there was a, back in 2012, there were Olympics that were held in London. And there was a small group of people who were talking on the internet about, they're going to show themselves. There's going to be a big flyover, a number of craft that will fly over the Olympics, and we will truly see that the ETs are here, et cetera, et cetera. And the announcement was made by a woman who claimed to represent the Pleiadian High Council. So I asked my own Andromeda Council people about this situation, and they said categorically no. It's not that it's a lie. It's that she's repeating what she's been told by what was an AI programming. What was AI programming on a ship that was pretty much hanging out somewhere in close proximity to the solar system. She was simply repeating what was being told to her, and she thought she was receiving communication from a high Pleiadian council. Of the name and form that she described, I checked with the Andromeda Council people that my contacts, and they said it doesn't exist. They checked all of their records from the mid-level fourth through all the fifth, and what this woman described didn't exist by name. And so, unfortunately, AI has in fact played a role in messing with some people. It's part of the process of the fear, manipulation, control of the people on this planet by reptilians, other regressives. And this actually ties into the whole topic that you were discussing 10 minutes ago regarding, well, you know, we'll get rid of as many people on Earth as possible. That's not a reptilian agenda, because why would they get rid of their own food source, either energetically or physically?
Well, but my point was that if they were backed into a corner, it says, well, we're not going to survive this. And they said, well, if we don't survive, nobody else will either. That was kind of...
Oh, you're right. Yep. Yeah.
We got nothing left to lose, right?
Right. Except that I think that if we bring this topic current to today, I think that what we're seeing is, the war, threats of war, the skirmishes being perpetuated by, as Simon would say, you know, the sociopaths. And at least in the context that I've learned about them, they are either the humans that have been working for the remaining reptilians on planet, and or the human reptilian hybrids who are at the top of the power pyramid, who are still executing the orders that they've been giving to keep as much of the people on this planet in as much fear as possible. And what better way to instigate fear than to perpetuate what seemed to be random terrorist acts. So it's, if you will, to bring summary to this particular topic, it's simply a matter of humans at the top of the power pyramid and human reptilian hybrids at the top of the power pyramid who are trying to perpetuate their own agenda of fear and control over the masses.
But it seems like it has deteriorated down to just such a desperate level. It's like you guys can't come up with any other intelligent, ways to approach this than to just reduce everything to just pure terror. That tells me that they're backed into a corner and very desperate. They've run out of options.
If it's effective and it continues to work, like Simon said,
right,
status
right.
quo, if this works, we're going to keep doing it as long as we can.
Right.
They don't have any incentive to change. Just like the governments, you know, formal governments of this planet, again, my own humble opinion, they have no incentive to say, we formally acknowledge that there has been an ET presence or multiple ET presences visiting this planet for, if not decades, hundreds of years, or maybe thousands.
Thousands.
They have no upside to doing that. Comments?
What I would just quickly say is that I suppose perhaps I might be the person who can have the greatest insight on this one.
Please.
The culture of a Draconis reptilian is one of ultimate power and greed without a concept of caring or sharing. And when you have a background of absolute command and control, you don't have that understanding or that capacity to come to the table and have this debate. That's the problem. This is why I talk about the culture and the ceremony and the ritual of these creatures, because they can't just come to a table and sit down and say, okay, cards on the table, we'll give this, what will you give? They can't do that until they can accept and understand that they are equal and they don't have a God-given right to eat people, to put it bluntly. There won't be a change. They can't change. They are incapable of changing until something gives. Something gives. And that's the problem. It's not that they're stupid. They're incredibly intelligent. But they are trapped by a cycle of their own pathetic culture. And now that's difficult for me to say, because I know that they are brilliant in the technological department and absolutely incredible. And, you know, if they could change and be good, they would be a wonderful benefit. But of course, at the moment, they cannot. So there's a small group of them, very small group of them left. You're absolutely right about the CERN device. Both Wynne and I were nodding to each other here quite vigorously while you were speaking. And they have no more options left. And this is what Alex is saying, that they have no more options. And I think when the hands reach 1 minute to midnight, I think that there will be some form of approach. But what that approach is, I don't know.
When they have no more options.
They have no more options now. That's the point. But they still have time. They have a small amount of time, and I think they're just hoping, or like an ostrich, they stick their heads in the sand, hoping that something will happen. But when it doesn't, you see, look, this is how I believe it works. When you are royalty within the Draconis reptilians, it is illegal to take any action that will weaken or show disrespect to the royal line or to the rest of the people. So the only way you can change is by imparting some of your energy in beings on the planet who then teach you compassion. Then you can say, well, actually, it's not me changing. It's the energy based on the earth changing. And there is this vague hope that they might begin to learn and understand. But at the moment, looking at everything, they haven't evolved enough. And, you know, I have to ask the serious question, is there actually a place for a race of creatures that are are not beneficial to the wider good. And this is as much their journey as it is ours. And they are going to have to make a choice, just as every human on this planet has to make a choice. And it is part of the great learning cycle. And maybe the choice is neither right nor wrong. It is just the choice they make. And all I care about is that the humans on this planet can get free and can get on with our lives and can actually go about life without all the fear and the fakery that is being placed on us. We need to literally go right to the foundations of our society and rebuild it. And as Wynne and I have often spoken about, the crucial point is when the system comes down, there will be a vacuum for a short period of time. We need to be prepared for another force, a negative force, which is going to try and get in on that vacuum and pass itself off as the savior.
Well, I think in that vacuum also there's going to be an absolute need for re-education, an absolute need for re-education, because the population is going to be so bewildered. Because essentially, you know, it's like Graham Hancock has always says is, you know, we're a species with amnesia. We don't know who we are. We don't know where we come from. And it's like there would be an absolute need for an absolute crash course in re-educating humans to who and how they really are. And that to me, that is the absolute imperative. Otherwise we're going to just slip right back into the same old nightmare again.
Yes, but I would say that people like Alex have been instrumental in trying to give a glimpse of the true history of humanity. And it's people like Alex.
Well, it's all of us. All of us who have an understanding of this have that. I feel the burden of responsibility for that. And it's, you know, all of us in this round table and all the other people out there who are aware of this, it's like the burden of responsibility to re-educate, to properly re-educate the entire population. That's what we're looking at here.
Well, you think when the Nazi regime, the Third Reich, fell, there was a denazifying process. And even after 20 years, there were still great pockets of resistance. So it's not something that can be done easily.
No.
Gentlemen, it's been 2 hours. I'm having a great time. Does anybody really need to go? Or can we continue? Would you like to continue? In which case, I'll play a theme. Stop this tape.
We can do another half an hour here over in Great Britain.
Okay.
That's good. I think my bottom can hold out for another half hour.
Another half hour. Okay, so I'm going to just stop this tape and play my outro. And thank everybody for listening to this very special Easter Bunny, Easter Egg conversation. We're all very excited. We've crashed at least 2 servers by now. It's been great fun. So there's the bumper and there's the Ever Beyond the outro. There we are. Okay. Give us a couple of minutes, people, and we'll be, just right back. Oh, yes, you are. You are listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. I would like to remind everybody that this is a subscriber-supported station and a donation-supported station. We do this all for the love of it, or for the craziness of it, or whatever, I don't know. In our defense, we try to answer our own questions. And I think this is one of the reasons that we're here tonight, is that I have loads of questions, and they're all being answered telepathically. Here's the thing. You don't need to call in. You don't need to, and I've stopped the telephones, right? You don't need to jam into the chat rooms and ask everybody questions. Just sit quietly and put your intent, put your question as an intent, that you can hear it, that you'll hear the answer. So ask it in your head. Try and get to a very simple question, a very simple idea, and then see if that idea isn't answered in the next, however long it might last. We have Simon Parks, Wynne Keach in Great Britain, in Whitby. We have Tolek and Jim Nichols in Arizona, and we have Alex Collier in Colorado, and myself here, JP, in Scotland. So, gentlemen, we were, you know, all in all, we're still talking about those pesky Aldebarans. So, who was holding the flag last time we left off?
I think it was Jim. Was it Jim or Tolek? I can't remember.
Go ahead, Arizona.
He's not there, is he?
Arizona's fallen. Want to take over, Simon?
Yeah. I think we've lost Arizona.
All right. Okay. We'll have a look in a minute. So Simon,
I would be quite interested. Really, I wanted to, because of the work that my mother did, you know, with Operation Paperclip and the Nazis, and I really wanted to have a chat with Jim just for a couple of minutes on some of that topic.
Right. Jim, are you still with us on the phone?
Still there? Or is he gone as well?
I think he's probably taking a bathroom break. Yes. So, yeah. So, anyway, I didn't put any music on. We could.
I'll save that for 5 minutes before the end, then. That'd be good.
So anyway, it's you and Alex and myself here. So Alex, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
Excellent. It's lovely. It's I really feel it's a kind of a way of I don't know. It's like a forming a council in a way, a council of elders. It's lovely. It's lovely to be in this environment. Some very, very high minds and high consciousness, and everybody brings their part to the table. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, I was going to say, it's more like into the Fellowship of the Ring. You know, we are here to destroy the ring so we can get rid of all the evil powers and we can all live free. So, Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah, I do look a bit like Bilbo Baggins.
You smell like him too.
There you go.
I got quite hairy feet, I have to say.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings is a very interesting story in itself, in how it was brought back into existence from ancient texts. And you can see the process there of humanity. You can see the Middle Earth producing all the equipment, which is what humanity has really been doing for the last 10 generations, industrial revolution, electronics, just taking all the natural resources of the planet and creating a level of technology which is beyond our normal level of technological evolution. So you can see...
Right, creating a reality that's completely outside of themselves.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm back, guys.
Ah, Jim's back.
If we might digress a little bit, I'm glad you mentioned Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth. I now that I have three distinguished gentlemen from the UK to chat with here, I just watched a magnificent BBC presentation called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Have you people seen that?
I haven't seen it, but I'm intrigued.
No, I've not seen that either.
Well, it's a miniseries. It was on BBC, and it's about British magic during like the 19th century. Okay. And I was kind of curious. I'm a big Harry Potter fan also, so I'm just really fascinated with the history of British magic. And I was wondering, I'm sure you realize that Sir John Dee, who was a court astrologer to Queen Elizabeth I, was actually the original 007 secret agent.
He was. That was his sigil.
Did you guys know that?
Yeah, he used to sign all the documents.
And actually that he was the architect of the New World Order, with Great Britain as being the centerpiece of that. And I was wondering if you gentlemen had... especially you, Simon, with your background British intelligence, if you could maybe discuss that. We find it so interesting that people like Aleister Crowley is so, becomes so involved in the American space program with NASA and Jack Parsons and JPL. I'd wonder if you guys would care to comment on the secret occult history of Britain and how that has evolved into our modern world.
Well, I've always said that there are two very, very important countries, and that is Great Britain. I'm not missing you out, JP, in Scotland. Great Britain and America. And America is where the physical action will take place. Great Britain is where the energetical action takes place. I think it's very difficult to mix magic and science. You're aware of the bill that's probably going through Congress at the moment, or has just gone through Congress, in relation to magic and the curriculum of schools. You'll probably be aware of that. But in Great Britain, there has been a long history where individuals were placed, and as Wynne has already said an hour and 44 minutes ago, where he was talking about how Britain, all the energies through the ley lines come through here. So it's easier for an individual or a magician to be placed within England to bring something forward. In terms of Dee, I am not aware that he was the first one to create the New World Order. I believe that he was receiving information, or I've been told that he was receiving information from off-planet sources.
Yes, it was channeled information. Uh-huh.
Right, okay. That matches what I've been told. To put him in a position, or he was placed in a position with Queen Elizabeth, because Elizabeth I contained a great deal of reptilian genetics. Not just because she was called Elizabeth, but she really did. And
she wore reptilian motifs on her gowns.
Right. And she was able, through money and through resources, to put Dee into a position where he wasn't just an advisor to her, but he was able to set things in motion. So there was another thing which I just mentioned to Wynne while we were talking, and that's time travel. There is a strong possibility that Dee had the ability to foresee the future, or one aspect of the future, and therefore he was planning, because Elizabeth, rightly or wrongly, she was very, very, very connected to Great Britain. She loved England, and she wanted England to be on the strongest timeline, or the greatest effect that would put England in a strong position. And Dee was instrumental in that. The problem was that Dee wasn't his own man. He was being manipulated. So to answer the question, I do not know. I honestly don't know whether he was the first one to create the New World Order. I think that he didn't call it the New World Order, but he talked about a new way of being and a new way of living, and that then got the label of the New World Order. So that's my understanding.
There's a brilliant video on YouTube called Brotherhood of the Beast, and it's produced by a gentleman from Australia, I believe, Chris Everard, where he talks, it's the most comprehensive view I've seen historically of the occult. A fascinating video, documentary. But it was, as you say, it was John Dee who was able to contact these entities, multidimensional entities. I wouldn't even call them extraterrestrial. I would call them hyperdimensional entities that showed him or gave him the plan. And they didn't really call it the New World Order, but they showed him a plan. And in the plan, they showed how each nation of the world was controlled or supervised by a particular non-physical entity. And he was shown the magical formulas or whatever to harness the energies of this consortium, with Britain at the center, to create the British Empire. And we got to agree that somewhere or another, Great Britain actually created this incredible empire. And you look at this dinky little island on the coast of Europe, dominated the world. And said, well, is that an accident? Or was John Dee in tune to something so powerful that the British Empire could really pull it off?
the reason is that Britain has always been very important in terms of spiritual energy. We have a system here of earth energy systems called the Ley Line System, which I don't know if you know of those in the States, but the UK is crucial to this network. It's the center of it. And if you look back to, going back to the Nazis again, if you look at Hitler, he was geomantically sensitive in terms of the way he positioned the infrastructure and new buildings. And during the war, he had one aspiration, and that was to set up the world center for the Axis Empire was going to be in the center of the UK in a city called Leeds, which is why that city was forbidden to be bombed by the Luftwaffe. He wanted, because he recognized that it was at a crucial point on the earth energy, and the earth energy system is also the earth consciousness system. So if you're going to impose your magic into the world generally, you have to be at those centers. So yes, the UK has always been very, very important in that respect. So I don't think it's an
I could appreciate that from a personal level. I've been to, Glastonbury and Avebury, and, I've been to some of the magic sites over there. Climbed the tour at Glastonbury, and I have, you know, personally felt a real, totally drawn to that area. And it's been an area of fascination for me. And it's a great pleasure to actually talk to you three gentlemen here today, because this is something very personal to me also.
Yes, it's something I've studied technologically as well. I've studied the Ley Line System in this part of England with friends that were both psychics and geomancers with looking dowse the energy lines. And I took technical equipment, and we had about 95% correlation between all the methods. And when you start looking at it as an engineer, you realize that that system is engineered as a holographic energetic processing system.
It's very, very real technology, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is a part of reality management, and it's ancient technology. And it's still
impressive.
Well, can you just expand on that little nugget there, please, Wynn?
Sorry, yes, I mean, for instance here, Whitby, for instance, if you can imagine important intersection points on this grid, in the UK, they you could think of them as chakras in the human body. Well, Whitby is in fact the 13th chakra on the ley line system if you map it out. And the ley line one of the most important ley lines actually goes through my house. And it hits a line of standing stones just above my house. And taking, for instance, the energy measurements from that, you find that that's actually engineered as a diffraction grating. It's actually it's actually a beam-splitting component that sends the signal directly to an ancient ruin we have here called Whitby Abbey, which is on the headland here, very famous for Dracula and all that kind of literature. And the rest goes back up to the rest of the international ley line system. So you can see that just taking those measurements, you can see that the energy and information there is designed as a holographic interference generating system. So,
but then you have to take into account also all the great cathedrals throughout Britain and Europe. These are not random events out there. These buildings are structured on the ley lines, and they're specifically designed to maximize the energy, the cosmic energy within the structure itself. So that's where,
absolutely. They were based on the pagan sites. They overbuilt the original pagan sites, the energy spots, to put these buildings on. But in your country, the United States, you may not be, for instance, be aware that when the telegraph system was rolled out in the States at the turn of the previous century, the original telegraph system was actually, the wires were run by people who were geomancers. Because they got the connections if they followed the paths that weren't necessarily the straight paths that we would run a telephone wire today. But to get the best operation, the ones that were placed by the geomancers, and those are the systems that survived to operate after the rest had failed. So, yes, those energies are real, and you can measure them. You can, not only with your body and your mind, but you can also measure them technically, and I've done that.
Are you lads familiar with any really good documentaries about the history of magic in Britain?
Well, see, the thing is that if we go back some time, magic wasn't actually seen as magic. It was seen as science. And
exactly.
science and magic were seen as one. Mm. And when I actually talked to some of my clients who in this lifetime are black magicians or have turned their back on being a black magician, they talk about how the Renaissance period split and how human consciousness accepted people like Leonardo da Vinci, their drawings as science, and that became the cell phone and the motor car, and how magic then dived underground. So the real philosopher's stone, the real alchemy, things like that were subtly hidden. Things have always been hidden through all the magic schools, but it was a planet-wide decision that was taken in North Italy, certainly because the Vatican was active. In terms of documentaries, very, very few truths come out because it is one of the most deeply guarded secrets.
Very guarded.
And you very rarely get whistleblowers because they don't live to tell their tale for very long. But certainly there are elements. And the best thing I say to people is if you're that interested in, don't be. Because if you're not careful, you will be sucked in and drawn in. And that's how many of my clients in previous lifetimes who have dabbled in magic and have had a back door, an energy back door created in them so that in this lifetime, the bad guys can access them energetically through the back door. It is a fascinating subject, and it does give answers to the physical world.
I just watched, like I said, I just watched this miniseries called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell from BBC, and that's what this really directly addresses. And it's a fiction story. It's a fictional account, and it's written by a woman there in the UK. And I'm thinking, well, wow, somebody over there knows a whole lot about this stuff, and it's very, very interesting. And I look at somebody like J.K. Rowling. And the incredible work she's done with the Harry Potter series. And it's like, you look at the magic that is displayed in that. And I use the term magic when I'm being kind here. It's actually occult. This occult technology that's being displayed here. And it's like, wow, it's like somebody knows a lot about this stuff. And it's just amazing how it is being showcased all of a sudden here in broad daylight. And I think it's very interesting.
Well, there are a number of authors and you know yourself, directors of movies that obtain information or given information. There's a guy called Paulson who wrote some what's called dark mysteries, I think, or dark magic books. And the hero in the book was a young girl called Lyra. Well, you know, of all the names that person could have chosen, he chose the name Lyra. So, whether people through divine intervention, through source, are given information, whether they channel it, whether somebody from MI5 or the National Security Agency gives them information, and you have this battle between good and evil trying to use the media to take it through. So I would think from what you're saying, I've not seen it, it would think it's somebody trying to tell the truth about what Britain, its role it played, and how deep the roots are. Because if the ordinary public can see something like that and think, well, this happened 200 or 300 years ago or 100 years ago, what must it be like now? So hopefully watching something like that will make people question.
Well, it's very interesting. And I was just curious if you gentlemen had any more insights into that. But, yeah, that's something you don't want to play with. And I understand it, J.K. Rowling, when she wrote Harry Potter, just pretty much channeled it. The whole thing just came to her.
And she was on a train journey. She was on a train journey, not a million miles away from where we are here. And it did come to her, and she started to write it on any bits of paper that she had.
Exactly. I saw that in her documentary. And anyway, it's just a little diversion here. I was just kind of curious about that. Thank you.
Alex.
Yes.
Haven't heard from you for a little while. Do you have any comments?
I was just fascinated with that late conversation. I thought that was absolutely magnificent. And I think it's great. And, you know, along the lines of Hollywood, they are doing everything they can to try to give us information. There are so many cryptic messages being delivered to the audience that is paying attention. For example, the latest Superman, Batman, there are incredible cryptic messages in the movie that they're trying to tell people what's going on because they cannot come right out and say it, you know, without heads coming off. So I just think that, you know, the information's out there and it's being given to us, to those who are paying attention and to those who are really listening. And, you know, they're doing their best to share what's going on as they are also figuring it out. You know, you got to remember that many of these people who are at the high levels, they have been drawn into these circles and fed all this information. And I think it was Hoagland, Richard Hoagland, who said, to much to his credit, that there's a different lie being told on every level. And now that those lies are being exposed, everyone's coming to the same conclusion that the way things were going is absolutely not going to work for humanity, for anyone. So they're doing their best to cryptically share information, you know, without jeopardizing their families' lives, their friends, etc. But I think that at some point we're all going to be exactly on the same page. And that's how I see it unfolding, is that we're all going to be on the same page here. And once we do that, the shift will occur like so fast, it'll catch everyone's breath away. So that's what I got.
Jim, you said to me, we were speaking a few weeks ago about the movie Tomorrowland.
Right.
And I think there are probably some moments of insight there that would tie into this topic.
Have to tune in Friday night when Yvonne Palermo and I talk all about the Tomorrowland mystery on Wolf Spirit Radio. Yeah, we're going to talk about this topic, and I'm looking forward to it. How much more time do we have to talk here?
As long as you like.
Jim, can you throw us a crumb? Can you throw us a crumb?
Excuse me?
Throw us a crumb.
Can you throw us a crumb, a bone here? Can you throw us any kind of a bone?
Can I tell you what it's about?
About Tomorrowland? No, I know about the movie, but, you know, about the mystery. Can you throw us about
the mystery? Well, the mystery is that the Tomorrowland movie blows a whistle on a secret society that actually existed, and it's called Plus Ultra. And it was formed at the end of the 19th century by Nikola Tesla, Thomas Edison, Gustav Eiffel, and Jules Verne.
Yeah.
And their plan was to actually create or somehow create what would be called a Tomorrowland. That they were tired of being bullied and exploited by the J.P. Morgans and by the politics and by the military warlords to use their technology to destroy humanity. And they agreed that, you know, we can make a better world than this if we were just given the chance. And so that's the mystery. And it's like, well, how far did they go with this? And ultimately, the secret society leads all the way to Walt Disney. That he was,
wow.
He was one of the later members of Plus Ultra. And just before he died, he was creating the Epcot Center down in Florida, which was essentially was realizing the dream of the original four members of Plus Ultra. But then he allegedly died in 1966. And the question is, well, did he really die, or did these guys actually create a dimensional wormhole or something, where they went off and actually created Tomorrowland somewhere else in some other reality? So that's the mystery of, in a nutshell, of Tomorrowland.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. That sounds fascinating.
And the guy who produced the movie, his name is Brad Bird, is also is the latest member of Plus Ultra. And so it's like this movie is showcasing what you think is just a stupid, silly Disney adventure. And it's like they're telling you what this whole secret society story right in your face, and you don't realize it.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah.
This is what Yvonne and I are going to talk about this a whole bunch on Friday night.
The only thing I can add to that is if you read Jules Verne's stories, I knew Jules Verne was involved. I didn't know the other names. They're new to me. Yeah. But that's why it was tragic with Jules Verne. It was the technology, but how it was being used badly, and how there would be this hero who was torn between, you know, his values on one side and on the world on the other. And Jules Verne poured out his heart through his science fiction books. So I was aware of Jules Verne, but the other names are new. So thank you very much for that. That was something I didn't know.
Well, it's something, it is a mystery, and it's very well hidden, and it's only just recently that this is starting to leak out. And so I thought, well, they talk about it very specifically in the movie, so I went and looked it up myself and said, oh my God, this is a real deal. There really was a Plus Ultra, and it really still exists. So we're going to dig more deeply into this.
Truth is stranger than fiction. Awesome, just awesome.
Okay,
well, gentlemen, it's been an honor.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, everybody. It's been, before we go further, would you like to do this again, anyone?
For sure. Absolutely. This has been delightful.
So maybe we can have a quarterly plenary session and see how the world's doing. And,
And maybe kick it in the butt a little bit and just move it along.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Until we meet again,
JP,
then.
Thank you.
JP, how about this then?
Mm-hmm.
I know that we don't want to take calls, mm-hmm. but how about if we did do this regularly, we could ask people to come up with topics, and then at least some of the topics, people would feel that they had some input into it. You know, I'm always very keen to mm-hmm. involve people, but rather than, because I appreciate that wouldn't be right for a round table like this. They can't have the calls. Mm. But maybe you could ask people to suggest topics.
That's a very good idea. A very good idea. And we could perhaps have some sort of what they call a tag cloud, so that the topics that are chosen sort of appear bigger in the text. And that will bubble up.
Fantastic. Thank
you. How about a farewell from everybody in turn? Now I'll just go round the clock that's on my Skype screen here. So who have we got? There we go. Alex, please.
God, it's been a pleasure, JP. You did a great job, ladies and gentlemen. We got off to a slow start, but you know that's because we don't really know each other, and you know, beginnings of conversations between new friends is often we stumble, but we're not new friends now. Now we're old friends, and the next several conversations, I'm sure, are going to be very vibrant and very alive, and as we continue to learn each other, more and more will come out, and I just want you to know that this is all for your benefit. We are doing this for you because we want you to catch up. We want you to be on the same page. So thank you for your time.
Alex Collier, thank you very much. Tolek.
Wow, Alex, you're a tough act to follow. seriously. I always find it to be an honor and to be enlightening to join other gentlemen who have skills and knowledge equal and excelling my own. I find that I'm always a student in this life. And so for me, I'm happy and I'm honored to be part of this multi-way conversation. As Simon, it was great to have you as part of this discussion again. And I'm glad that you brought your friend with you. And I think any time that we can expand our own minds and our own hearts and souls, we can always learn more. So, JP, thanks for doing this, and thanks for having me as part of this multi-way discussion. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Tolik. And here's the thing. You've all been guests on Ever Beyond before, every single one of you. And it's like, well, you've been here once. What is it they say? You know, you come here twice, you know, once on the way up and once on the way down. And,
If I may make one more comment.
Go ahead, Tolik.
As well as all of these other gentlemen, we've all been interviewed before and we've all been involved in panel discussions before where there are a number of questions that we keep answering as fast as we can and as thorough as we can. And this is quite different because it truly is a round table where we're sharing our knowledge, what we've learned, what we believe, what we perceive. And so, I think it, as Alex mentioned, it takes a little bit of a time for a conversation like this to get life and to get energy and to get traction. And I believe that has happened. You know, we've come to learn about each other a little bit better, but it's truly unique because it is a round table and each of us have a different perspective. We come to this information having met different people from different dimensions and learned different things. So it's a sharing experience as compared to answering questions. So it's different. It's enjoyable, but it's different.
Lovely. Thank you. I was hoping to achieve something like that. And exactly the word that you used is perspective. A lot of people going on about truth. Truth is, oh yeah, we're part of the truth movement and, you know, Alex Jones is Bill Hicks and that's the truth, you know, and then, you know, 9/11 was an inside job and that's the truth. But, you know, there's all these different layers of it. But it's much better to see things in terms of this is the perspective. And something that Alex has always said is from the Andromedan's perspective, such and such and such and such. And I think that's really very important is that rather than in my humble opinion, which is like, that's not good. That's not good for your own self-esteem. But to say from my perspective, this is how it is, then everybody can relax. Nobody's imposing their truth on anybody. Yeah. And so, and it's very interesting. I just want to see how this could expand into something very, very useful. Jim, would you like to bid your farewells?
Yeah, thanks, JP. I deeply appreciate your having me on your show, and to be part of such an esteemed group here is just extraordinary. And it's kind of also fulfilled a wish of mine. I've been wanting to talk to Simon Parks for over a year now, so it's like we finally managed to accomplish that. And Simon, if you get back to pursuing your political career, I wish you all the best for that also. Thanks. But thank you. I think this has been delightful, and I wholeheartedly suggest that we continue that now that we've kind of established a dialogue here. And I think a dialogue that we can be comfortable with. I think let's push it and see where else we can go with this.
Thank you very much. Now, gentlemen, I'll keep this chat room, this little Skype box. I normally pack them up and throw them away, but you can keep your dialogue, start adding your contacts and things like that. Simon Parks and Wynne Keach, would you like to bid your farewells? Thank you very much, Jindal.
Okay. It's truly been a pleasure and an honor to be invited onto this tonight, JP. And I must say, in all my travels of the world, and I've traveled extensively and worked over large parts of the world, I've come to realize, as I'm sure we all have, that there are only two types of people in the world, good people and bad people. And the good people outweigh the bad people by a huge number. And you can see here we have people who have influences from different exo groups on this round table tonight. And you can see amongst those, doesn't matter what the differences are, there are still good people out there. And I can feel that it extends through the listening audience here. And I think it's so wonderful that people have shown commitment to actually listen into the show and to patiently go through what we've had to be able to show for them. And to everybody out there, thank you very much. Simon?
Oh.
Wake up.
My turn.
Simon.
I was waiting for you to call me, JP. You called everyone.
I'm sorry. Because I sort of did you as a bulk. The whip began because you're on one mic. But yes, indeed. Thank you very well. Let me say thank you very much, Wynne. And I'd like to maybe break down individually in future shows some of the things we've been talking about tonight. Break them down, unpack them, untie the knots. To me, there seems to be an enormous number of untied knots that need to be sorted out. Everybody can then breathe and kind of start making peace again. Simon Parks, would you like to have our final farewell?
To all the thousands of Connecting Consciousness members throughout this planet, thank you for your strength and determination. This year and next year will be the testing of you and me and many other people. Remember that we're all equal. No one is better than anyone else. Stay true to yourself. And when the media perhaps start to give you lies or the cell phone network is cut off and Facebook is cut off, don't go into a panic. Remember what we've talked about. Keep your head. Form your groups. Try and meet up. Try and support each other. And those of you who have got some supplies, I hope you will, share them with other people like-minded as yourselves. So don't be fearful, because we have to go through this, and the outcome is going to be good. So thank you, JP. Jim, I wanted to talk more about the Nazi stuff. Maybe next time we can. Alex, an absolute pleasure. It shows that somebody who is fifth dimensional can get on with somebody who is fourth dimensional. And Tolek, it was just nice to have a chat with you. So, JP, thanks ever so much.
You're very welcome. Any last words bursting from anyone?
Bedtime.
Ah, thanks again. It was delightful.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Thanks, as they say on the Magic Roundabout, time for bed, said Zebedee.
I was going to say that.
This has been a very special Easter egg ever beyond. Thank you very much, and good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Beyond.